I'm going to try and get my speakerphone to work if it...
Hello?
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 Hello, this is Jay.
Oh, hi, Jay. Kim's not on yet.
Okay.
He should be here any moment.
So I'm not on the air now.
Hello?
Well, yeah, you are. You're live to everybody.
Okay.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
How's everyone doing?
There's Kim, Jay.
Good.
Thank
Jay,
you.
Jay, you're on the call?
Yeah, I'm here on the...
Oh, great. Call. Allison, you're there?
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, great. Anybody want to say hi before we get started with the formal call? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, would anybody like to say hello?
We're just a little bit early, Kim. It's just,
oh, okay, no one's
are
on
just
yet.
Coming on now.
Yeah. How's the weather out there, Jay? Where are you, in Pennsylvania?
Yep. Very nice day, clear, like a fall day. Now it's dark and it's crisp outside.
Sounds nice.
Yep, I was just out watering my jade plants.
Great.
I pour myself a glass of wine.
Settle down for a teleconference call?
Yeah, and then I'll get ready and eat.
Great.
Have a late dinner tonight.
Sounds great.
Yeah. And how are you folks doing?
Yeah, we're doing pretty good.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. I'm excited about your new book that's coming out soon.
Oh, well,
is it out already, Jay?
It's finished. It's at the printer. It's just waiting to be shipped.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah,
so,
it's a very good one. Well, your book.
I got a couple of sample copies. They send a couple advances, and it looks it's a beautiful book.
Mm.
I'm very happy with it.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
You put such great attention to all the things that you do. I mean, your publications are always top-notch.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Anybody on has joined us, would like to say hello?
Yes, hi, this is Mary Terhune from Boston.
Hi, Mary, how are you?
This is
Laura.
Harold.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Laura, how's it going?
Good.
Good.
This is Harold Goodman in Maryland.
Hi, Harold, how are you doing?
I'm fine.
Good.
This is Donata Dow in Maryland.
John. Who from Maryland?
Donata Dow in
Hi,
Maryland.
Hi, Donata, how are you?
Hi.
Ilana in New York.
Oh, hi, Ilana. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Kim?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Good.
I'm John Munno in Tucson. Hey, Kim.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Going well. Ooh. Thanks, Kim.
Good. Who from Tucson?
What's that?
Somebody from Tucson?
Yeah, John Munno.
Okay.
Houston.
Oh, from Houston. Great.
Yes, this is Jennifer. I met you this weekend at the...
hey, Jennifer.
Hi.
So you got on the call from one of the brochures I left there, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. That's great.
And Shirley from snowy Colorado.
Oh, hey, Shirley. How are you?
Enjoying our snow.
Nice to hear you. You got snow there, huh?
It's snowing.
Wow.
It's a blizzard.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Jeez, a blizzard.
Amazing.
Already?
Early in the year.
Already. The first snow of summer.
Wow. That's unusual. That's soon, isn't it, Shirley?
It's a little early, but we're enjoying the moisture. We need it badly.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and get started. I'm going to conduct this interview the way we normally do, which is to follow the format of a formal interview for the first 40 or 45 minutes, and I'll mute everyone out during that period of time, and then after the formal interview, I'll unmute the lines and allow people who are participating to ask their own questions. So let me go ahead now and mute the call out. Jay, can you still hear me?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are anybody else? Can you guys hear me? Okay, good. So it seems like that worked. Okay, well, first of all, Jay, thank you so much for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to join us for this interview.
Mm-hmm.
We very much appreciate you taking the time out to share your knowledge and experience and wisdom.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Oh, great. Let me go ahead and just give you a quick introduction. For those of you who don't know, Jay Yasger is best known for his very famous work at Yasger's Homeopathic Dictionary. But Jay is involved in homeopathy in a variety of ways. First of all, he's a licensed pharmacist, and he received his pharmacy degree from Duquesne. How do you pronounce that?
Duquesne.
Duquesne
University.
University, okay. And also a master's in science in allied health from the University of Northern Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Jay has worked for Humphrey's Pharmacal, which is the nation's second oldest manufacturer of homeopathic remedies, and also Weleda, which is an anthroposophical firm that also manufactures various types of interesting products based on anthroposophical medicine. And he currently works as an independent retail pharmacist blending homeopathy into his pharmacy practice. He's a member of several homeopathic organizations, including the Homeopathic Pharmacopeia Convention of the United States. And Mr. Yasker was one of the first to offer certified continuing education credits to homeopathic pharmacists when he presented his first talks and films to the Pinellas County Pharmaceutical Association in St. Petersburg, Florida in 1985. Jay is the well-known author of Yasker's Homeopathic Dictionary, but he is also the editor of a number of other books as well, including Dunham's Lectures, Woodbury's Materia Medica, Erastus's Cases, and also his soon-to-be coming-out book, 111 Great Homeopaths. So, again, Jay, thank you so much for joining us on the call tonight.
Sure, it's my pleasure.
Jay, I thought I would start by asking you, how did you originally get involved in homeopathy?
Well, that's an interesting story. When I was in pharmacy school, I befriended a number of graduate students, and some of them were from India. And as I liked Indian food, sometimes they would invite me over to eat. And one evening, I was at their apartment, and out comes his wife from the bedroom. She's going to go to the kitchen and prepare the meal. And he says, the graduate student said to me, "Well, what do you think of homeopathy? Do you believe in homeopathy?" And I replied right away, "What? Small doses curing illnesses? Well, that's impossible." And then little did I know that about 5 years later, I'd be deeply immersed in homeopathy. I moved to Florida after about 5 years after graduating from pharmacy school. I moved to Florida, and I got involved with massage school. I didn't... I wanted to go to medical school, but I applied and didn't get in. And if I had known about naturopathic medical college, I would have gone that route, done that. But that didn't work out. So anyway, I got involved with massage school, and I got exposed to a lot of different holistic techniques. And then after that, I became involved with the holistic health clinic there, and there was a naturopath and a naturopath, and he... guided my studies into homeopathy, and I just soaked it up, and a little bit later, then I was writing articles, and then soon the book, and, you know, the rest is kind of history, as they say. So that's really my beginning in homeopathy. And actually, to go back as a prologue, when I was, you know, in my studies in pharmacy school, I came across the term allopathic, and I looked up allopathic, and I, lo and behold, well, that's what I'm involved with. That's what I'm studying there in pharmacy school. And then the dictionary had an entry said, compare homeopathy, homeopathic. So I looked up homeopathy, and the definition there was really all I knew. Small doses curing illnesses, diseases, and... using the likes, curing likes principle. So really, I mean, if someone who doesn't know anything about homeopathy and they go to a dictionary and look it up, well, suddenly they're saying, well, small doses curing illnesses, and then that's really the only exposure that they have to homeopathy. And then, of course, you're going to have a reaction like I did. It's impossible. How could, you know, micro amounts of something cure an illness? Well, that's impossible. But then... what's needed after that is someone to read philosophy and methodology of homeopathy, and then once you put the time in to do that, then, of course, generally what happens is the person begins to understand the rationale about homeopathy, and then, you know, very often, which is the case not just now, but in the history of homeopathy, people convert, and they say, you know, this is so logical, this sounds... so good and whatnot, and then they go on to experiment, and then they find, my God, this works. There's something going on here. So that's kind of a lengthy answer to your question.
Oh, that was great. It's nice to have that background before we get into the interview further. So, yeah, I appreciate that very much. You know, I wanted to ask you about your dictionary because pretty much everybody knows you through your dictionary. And, you know, myself personally, I feel that it's essentially a book that everyone involved in homeopathy should have, and probably even people outside of homeopathy
yeah.
should have.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is like one book that we can say that everyone in homeopathy should own. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, how did you get around to actually preparing this dictionary? What brought you to it?
Well, that's kind of interesting too, because I was reading the books. I was reading a book, *Ars Materia Medica*, and then it just occurred to me, you know, what if somebody without my knowledge were to read Borky's Materia Medica, and they would read all these words and they don't know what they mean. I mean, a lot of the words were unfamiliar to me even. So then I heard that there was just a booklet size dictionary, you know, very small, a limited amount of words that the NCH had put out many years ago. And I got a copy of that, and I looked at that, and I thought that that was rather inadequate. And then I was talking to Julian Winston, and we were talking about a number of things. I said, is there any other book that's out there that defines terms and whatnot? And he said, no. And then right away, well, I said, I'm going to write one. So I decided at that point that I was going to write it. And then a little bit less than 2 years later, the first edition was completed and being sold. So that's really the genesis, the story behind that.
In preparing the book, did you have to go back to old medical dictionaries from the late 1800s, or how did you actually? What was the procedure that you used to create it?
Well, that's basically what I did. I mean, if any project, you sit down and think about how you're going to accomplish the project, and what I decided to do was to go through. At least my first book that I went through was Borky's Materia Medica, page by page, line by line, to, you know, get all these terms. I assembled them in a notebook and in no particular order. And then I decided, well, I've got to go back, get some older medical dictionaries, either go somehow contact antiquarian bookstores and find you know, these dictionaries from the 19th century. There were a couple in my college library, but not, you know, they weren't old enough. Some of them were fairly old, of course. But so that's basically how I did it. And then I went through entry by entry, page by page, and wrote out definitions.
Amazing work. In the process of writing the book, were there any words that you came across that you might want to share with us that were just interesting words or things that you learned in the process or any tidbits of information that you think people might find useful?
Well, I don't know. I'd have to think about that a little bit.
Okay, all right. Or any stories or anything that you came across in the process of putting it. I know at the back of the book there are bios of different homeopaths. I mean, was there perhaps anything in there of interest that I mean, because there's so much information in that book.
For instance, you come across the term marsh gas,
mm-hmm.
and that's something that I didn't know what it was, so I had to go and search out what exactly was meant by marsh gas. A lot of things like that. And then,
can you tell us what did you find out marsh gas meant?
Well, basically, it's just a gas which is occurring as a natural product of the decomposition of organic material found in, you know, swamps or stagnant pool areas.
So basically an area that where there's a lot of chance of getting epidemic-type diseases. And,
uh-huh.
Yeah. Very interesting. So, Jay, I've heard that you're a chief in a Nigerian tribe. I thought maybe we could just go off course for just a little bit.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that a little bit? That sounds very interesting.
Well, I in 92, I went to Nigeria and spent a couple months there, and then I did make contact. I forget how I made contact with this fellow who ran a school, homeopathic school. I went there and gave a series of lectures, and then toured the country with toured that area of the country with him. And there was and he wasn't a chief. We visited this territory, chiefdom, and I met the chief there, and we became good friends. And then he decided to make me a chief in natural medicine, as they call it, in a ceremony, and that's how that came about. So it's certainly nothing where I stayed on and learned their methods of healing or learned their culture to any great degree. So it's not something elaborate like that. But I was made a chief and given a certificate.
Now, I know you're involved in plant spirit medicine. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Did you learn that while you were in Nigeria or in other places? Or?
Well, no, I learned that here, and I combine that with my shamanic work. I'm involved with shamanic healing, shamanic journey work. If any of your listeners are familiar with that, that's a very powerful method of healing, a method of gaining information about the client that I'm working with. And it doesn't really have anything to do with homeopathy per se. What shamanic work involves is the person who practices it goes into a trance and then makes contact with either power animals or other angelic beings. And then during my journey time with them, I'll ask a question or I'll be engaged in a dialogue somehow with these entities. And then after the trance ends, then I come back and bring this information to the client that I've journeyed for. And oftentimes I don't know what the information means or how relevant it is, or oftentimes it doesn't have a meaning for me, but when I relate it to the client, it has meaning for the client. And then the client can, do what he wants, you know, with that information. So that's just another avenue for my healing work. I mean, it depends on when I see people, you know, how I sort of size them up as to what would be the best, what I could do for them at this juncture. Certainly homeopathic remedies are a big help, but sometimes other healing techniques can be very valid at that time also.
Are you using the shamanic work with homeopathy? Are you integrating the two of them together?
Well, only if it becomes apparent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I only want shamanic work, then I'll do that. But if some homeopathic remedy were to come up in the work, then certainly I would share that with the client and suggest it or whatever, how I would want to use that information. Other times I would just take a case in a normal fashion and then, suggest a remedy in that way, in the classical way.
Jay, you know, one of the books that you published, Dunham's Lectures, has always been one of my personal favorites. I know probably a lot of people on the call are not aware of that book, but for those of you who don't know, it's a series of lectures that James Tyler Kent gave at the Dunham College in Chicago, and most of us are familiar with the lectures that he gave in Philadelphia, which is Kent's lectures on homeopathic materia medica. And I've always been amazed to actually see, the remedies in some cases are actually fairly different. How did you come about to publish that book, and what can you tell us about it?
Well, after I put out the dictionary, and then soon thereafter I came out with the E.E. Case book and the Woodbury book, was talking to Christopher Ellithorpe, who unfortunately passed away this past spring. But he's a scholar in the homeopathic field and a great book collector and a lover, just a pure lover of homeopathy. And
I was very sad to see Chris pass on. I mean, he was a very unique and special individual, for sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I had been talking with him for several years prior to this, and then he said, you know, I've come across these lectures that Kent gave at the Dunham Medical College in Chicago, and they're different from his lectures on Materia Medica, you know, the book that he wrote, and Chris thought that it would be nice to have them reprinted. And I said, well, Chris, then let's do it together. So Chris typed up the lectures, and then I retyped them and put them into the computer and got them ready. And they're available as in a booklet form. It's not a real book. It's more of I forget how many pages, maybe 16 or 24-page 5x8 size a booklet. For instance, there's four lectures. They're all different, like I said, from his book. And then one lecture I don't think is even in his book on anthracyanum, if I'm not mistaken. And that lecture, for instance, is about three, maybe four pages long. So that's really how that came about. And I'm sure that there's many other lectures, but I don't have any more than what's been produced already.
Sure. It's always been kind of interesting to me that the remedies seem fairly different in their description. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about this or pondered this situation at all? Or?
Well, not really. Yeah. I haven't thought deeply about, you know, maybe what was going on with Kent. But you can imagine that someone gives a lecture here on chamomile, and then they travel and they go on their circuit, and then they give another lecture somewhere. So you can imagine that the lectures will be different, and people will get different perspectives from, you know, just a different lecture.
Sure. I mean, you know, it's very interesting because I've always felt myself personally that Kent's lectures on homeopathic Materia Medica was one of the most useful books in clinical practice, because the descriptions of what he had seen in his own practice were so often exactly what you would see in contemporary practice. And here's this book that very few people are even aware of, that where, you know, basically you've got one of the great masters of homeopathy describing the remedies in from a different point of view. And I think this is, you know, really invaluable. So I want to applaud your efforts in putting that book together. I think it's just one of the great treasures that we have available to us.
I don't want to forget this point, but because I want to make an appeal to people who might already have my dictionary or thinking of getting it, that they can, I would appreciate it if they have words that perhaps I've missed or terms that maybe they would like to see redefined or defined in a different way or whatnot. I would encourage them to write me. And, of course, you can do so. The address is in the book. And you know, or my email, or the website is certainly in the book, so you can always email me through the website.
Let me actually give people that information right now. The name of your publishers is Van Hoy Publishers. That's Victor Apple Nancy, Van Hoy, H-O-Y, Publishers. And the address there is P.O. Box 636, P.O. Box 636, and that's in Greenville, Pennsylvania, 16125. I'll give the phone number out. It's 724- Mm-hmm. 588-7339, and your website, which is got some good information on it, is www.yasgur.net. That's www.yasgur, and Yasgur spelled YASGUR.net, and then your email address is yasgur@juno.com. So, yeah, people have suggestions. So are you talking about for perhaps a subsequent edition of the book that where you'll add additional information?
Yeah. I've always been working steadily on, you know, making further additions. Like I said, the first edition, that came out in 91, and then I've had three more editions. It's in the fourth edition now. So, yeah, I'm thinking of bringing out another edition. I don't know when, but, you know, there's always things that can be, you know, added or wording changed to make things clearer. You know, there's always improvements that can be made.
Sure, sure, sure. Jay, tell us about the Erastus' case book. I mean, I've always loved Erastus' case in terms of, you know, just, you know, the him being such a Hahnemanian homeopath, and I've always thought those cases in that book were just excellent learning cases. Well, so what can you tell us about just how that book came about or anything about it that might be interesting?
Well, yeah, that book was out of print when I heard about it in, I guess it'd be 92, thereabouts, and I decided, well, a number of people have told me it's such a good book and it's not in print, and so I decided to see if I could get a copy of it. So I managed to get a copy of it, and then I had to tear it apart, basically, so that the printer could photograph the pages and in order to get it printed for the printing process. And then I decided that the book is a series of cases that a doctor case published in journals at that time, around the turn of the century. And as time went on and the homeopathic community realized what a great prescriber and he was, what a great, he understood homeopathic philosophy so well, they encouraged him that he should write a book so that all these cases could be, you know, assembled together. So that's what I decided to do. But then I realized that they came from journals, and a lot of times after a doctor would present cases, he would have discussion with other doctors in the audience. So I went back to the literature, and I found a number of discussions that he had with doctors about cases. And so I had to get that material and then type all that out separately and enter that into the computer and then include that as a kind of a large appendix. So the person who reads, you know, the cases, then they can go back to the back of the book and enjoy a discussion that the doctors had with Dr. Case about, you know, the clinical cases he was presenting. And then in addition to that, I decided, well, he also wrote other articles and papers, so I decided to include some of those additional articles. So it's not just a reprint of his original book that he wrote, but it's about 100 additional pages. And so I think it makes for a much more rich experience for the reader.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's one of my top favorite casebooks, that's for sure. It's excellent work. So, Jay, you're coming out with a new book very soon. It's called 111 Great Homeopaths.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, I don't, it's the genesis is sort of nebulous. I had always thought about a book like this, you know. In other fields, in literature or science or whatever, you have 100 great scientists, 100 great, you know, classical musicians or whatever. So I thought, well, what about 100 great homeopaths? And then I thought, well, let's put 111 of them together, you know, maybe make a catchy title. I don't know.
Probably number 112 is pretty upset with you right now, you know.
Well, actually, there's 113 in the book.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, because as I thought of this project about 5 years ago, and at that point, well, I got my 100, but then since then, a couple people have died, three or four people, and then so I decided to bump it up to 113, but leave the title like it is. And then I thought, well, you know, why not make this in other languages? So I assembled a number of translators, and I provided them with a text. And then time went by, and I had a book that's now in six languages. So what someone looks at when they open up, say they just open up randomly the book, they'll see on the left-hand side of the page is the picture of the individual, and on the right side is short paragraphs, six short paragraphs, all of them in different languages. And the languages are Chinese, English, German, French, Portuguese, and Spanish.
Oh, so all six languages are in the same book?
Yeah.
Oh, very interesting.
So hopefully I'll be able to sell the book around the world, and then eventually, if China ever opens up, well, I'll be long dead by then, but somebody will be reading it in China. What the heck?
Well, you know, just so you know, Jay, it could very well happen. I mean, I know they've been, you know, very much oriented towards, you know, traditional Chinese medicine and acupuncture, but we've been seeing a lot of interest from Japan for homeopathy, and, you know, I think that things that are going on in Japan oftentimes can filter into China. So it'd be interesting to see what happens in the next few years. Can you give us some ideas of some of the homeopaths that are in this book?
Oh, gosh. Helmuth, Todd Helmuth, who is a great, one of the greatest homeopaths in the United States. He was known for his homeopathic surgery, which means that homeopathic remedies are used in order to avoid surgery, primarily. And then, of course, if there is surgery, the homeopathic remedies can be used before and after surgical procedures so that the surgery goes easier and so that recovery is better. That's one fella. You've got Elizabeth Wright Hubbard, another important homeopath. You've got just Bernard Finke. Of course, Hahnemann is there. You've got a number of Europeans, which, you know, we have probably never heard of. I know that I didn't hear of a few of them when I was doing my research and trying to make my decision about who to include. So a lot of people were, a lot of important figures from Europe were included because of their far-reaching influence. And then it was hard, of course, to pick 100 people, and I did consult a number of people around the, you know, experts around the world. And then I thought, well, you know, why don't you include another small section on lesser notables, and I did that. There's probably about 30 other people without pictures, though, that are included in a separate section entitled Other Notables. So, people can peruse that section and get an idea about what those people did. For instance, there was a French homeopathic bookseller who did a lot of great work. His name is Balliere, and he did...
Can you spell that for everyone so we...
Well, I don't know the exact spelling. It's a Ballier, something like that.
Okay.
He was a great individual who published books. I mean, that's a great service to homeopathy. I mean, it may not be the type of person that everybody... let me see if I can go and find his exact spelling here. Ballierre, Jean-Baptiste Marie Ballier. And he was a great, like I said, a book publisher. And you had a number of, like, for instance, Borky and Toffel. People may be familiar with the name Borky's. You know, Borky, they manufactured a lot of homeopathic remedies, but they also made a lot of books, printed, underwritten the publication of a lot of books. And, of course, I mean, if you don't have literature, if you don't have books, especially at that time in the homeopathic history, then you don't, you know, how can people learn? Very, you know, especially, I mean, we take things so for granted today with the internet and with airlines and conferences. We can go quite easily here and there. But for someone back, say, in 1900 to go to the dedication of the Hahnemann Monument in Washington, D.C., well, you're going to be planning that for a year. And you take a month out of your life to either, get on a horse and go there, or buggies, or take a train, or however you get there. So that's basically the genesis of this book and some of the history of this book. I priced it very, very low. A book of 300 pages, 8.5 by 11 book, for $24 is pretty cheap.
So. Actually, since you're bringing up price, Allison, are you on the line?
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, so I know, Allison, that you wanted to offer the people on the call some special pricing on all of Jay's books.
Sure.
So before, I'm going to continue the interview in a minute, but you might as well just tell them now.
Well, they're welcome. They should just make an online order and ask for the $5 off each title that is available. Of course, the Dunham Lectures is just not that expensive, so we can give a little discount on that. But all of the dictionary, 111 Great Homeopaths, the Woodbury book, they're all welcome to have $5 off.
Oh, great. Okay. And can you just tell them the website to go to or the phone number to call? Just
yeah, it's www.wholehealthnow.com/books, or I'm always standing by toll-free, 866-599-5950. That's
great.
Specific time.
Thanks, Allison. Thanks. So,
you know, what that brings to my mind, I mean, I didn't talk about Woodbury.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about Woodbury's book as well.
Yeah. Well, Woodbury, Benjamin Woodbury Jr., his father was a homeopath physician, but he was a very good homeopath and just an all-around person who was involved with in the homeopathic community, not just as a clinician, but he went to meetings, he was involved with administrative tasks and whatnot. And at that time, in the early part of the 20th century, there were homeopathic dispensaries and small homeopathic hospitals, and who has to work in the hospitals in addition to the doctors or the nurses? And nurses didn't know any homeopathy, or they knew very little, so Woodbury was probably the original author of Materia Medica for nurses. And he wrote two editions of that book, and that was out of print also, and I decided to bring that back into print after talking to a few people. And it's a small Materia Medica. It's a very good Materia Medica, it's limited in that it has about around 120 remedies discussed. And I thought, well, why not make what I did with the case book? I decided to gather about a dozen different articles, papers that Woodbury wrote, and transcribe those and include those at the back of the book. So that book also has about 100 pages of additional material. And that's really how that came about. So, I mean, Materia Medica is a Materia Medica. It's not just for nurses.
Sure.
But he titled the book Materia Medica for Nurses because in the beginning of his book proper, before the Materia Medica starts, he includes about 30 or 40 pages of homeopathic philosophy, homeopathic pharmacy, you know, an introduction for nurses to be, you know, for them to easily read about homeopathy. And then he's got the Materia Medica there for them. So that's basically how that came about.
Very interesting. Jay, are you, I assume, I know you're always a busy fellow, always working on new projects. I assume that you've got something in the fire working on right now?
Well, not so much. I will need to relax at least for a little while, but I mean, I am always doing something, and what I've been doing lately is I've been writing some articles, some book reviews, and I write some abstracts for article abstracts for the British Journal. It used to be called the British Homeopathic Journal, but it's now called Homeopathy. And what I'll do is I'll digest some of the articles from English language journals and then submit them to the homeopathy. It's, like I said, it's now called homeopathy. And then they'll in turn print them as abstracts. Another thing, I found an older book when I lived in Florida. I found actually the notebook from a homeopathic medical student at Hahnemann Homeopathic Medical College in Philadelphia. I was just I was browsing through the medical section of this antiquarian bookstore, and I found this notebook in the in the handwriting of medical students. And what,
well, what
I
year
did,
was that? Do you remember?
I don't know. I think it was sometime right around the turn of the century.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was before 1900.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, about 1895, 94, somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And
so Kent probably would have been lecturing at that time.
Yeah, he probably would have been lecturing, but
yeah.
Kent did not deliver these lectures, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
With the help of Chris Ellithorpe, we determined that it was Moore, M-O-H-R. I can't
think okay, yeah.
of his name now, but he's Charles Moore. And he was a very he was a very good lecturer at Hahnemann Medical College, and he was a co-editor of Herring. Herring wrote this massive book, Guiding Symptoms of Materia Medica, and he was a co-editor of that book.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a very a noteworthy teacher that was at Hahnemann. And he actually lectured, and these are the notes from about, I think it was a year's worth of lectures that was in my notebook. Anyway, a few years ago I typed them into the computer, and now I have them ready, and I've just been swamped with so many other things, and it is about time that I bring it out. And I may bring it out in a, not in a perfect bound book, but maybe in a, you know, in another format. I'm not sure what format, but I mean, and that would certainly just be a curiosity thing. You know, people could read, well, these are the actual notes that this guy took. I mean, I would think that would be fascinating, fascinating reading.
Absolutely, I totally agree. I'm curious, you know, I have a personal interest in the old homeopathic journals, especially the Hahnemannian journals, like, you know, the Organon Journal, the International Hahnemannian Association Transactions, Medical Advance, the early issues of Hahnemann Monthly, things like that. Have you ever thought about trying to publish any of these materials? I mean, this seems like something that would be very valuable for the community to have.
Well, I don't... I'm not prepared to do that sort of work. I know that...
It's quite a job, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I know that your company has done some of that, hasn't it?
Well, we published it inside of our software. But
yeah.
You know, but not everybody has software, and some people would actually like to have this in printed form. And
yeah.
I'd actually talked to Christopher Ellithorpe about that before he passed away. And,
yeah.
But, you know, it needs somebody like yourself to take on a project like that, you know.
Oh, boy, yeah.
I'm not trying to coerce you here, so...
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what I did do is I created a cumulative index for the homeopathic physician.
Oh, yes, yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, you're...
By the way, as for people who don't know, the homeopathic physician was the official organ for the International Hahnemannian Association and probably one of the two or three, four best homeopathic journals ever written.
Yeah, that's very true. It was one of the best classical homeopathic journals ever. It would sure be nice if it was reprinted, but that would be a very expensive task.
Sure. Nineteen years, is that right?
Yeah, it ran for 19 years. Mm-hmm. I think it was 1881.
Yeah.
Right up to 1899 or something
right,
like that.
Right.
And I was talking to Julian Winston about that one day, and I said, gee, you know, wouldn't it be nice to have an index for that? And he said, yeah, it would be, but nobody has a journal. You know, that's such a rare journal nowadays that nobody really, there's only maybe a half a dozen people in this country that have the complete run of the journal, and
sure.
Then maybe a half a dozen people in all of Europe. And then I thought, well, what the heck, I'll do it anyway, and I got time on my hands, and I got the ability, and so I decided that, so I went ahead and did that project, and then created the cumulative index for the entire journal, so.
That's fantastic, project, you know, what an amazing resource that publication is. It's just...
Yeah, it's very helpful for people doing research, and then really, you know, a person, if they want to get some articles from it, then all they have to do, they know exactly what they want because they looked it up in the index.
Sure.
Then they can contact the National Center for Homeopathy and then ask them to go to the particular journal, what year it is, and please Xerox such and such. So you pay a small fee, but at least you can get the, you do have access to them.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Just so you know, Jade, I think we have seven of the 19 volumes in the Encyclopedia Homeopathica program, and we actually have three or four more that are ready to be processed. So we have a total of about 11 of the 18, and as you said, there's very few people in the world who have complete collections. So,
yeah.
But our objective actually is to make those all available in electronic format at some point.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me just ask you one final question. I see we're running close to the end of time here. I thought maybe I'd ask you something outside of the scope of the books. Could you maybe give us some suggestions on, you know, what a person needs to do to grow as a practitioner in homeopathy, how they can keep evolving and improving themselves? Do you have any suggestions in that area?
Well, yes. Actually, there can be two phases to this. Obviously, a person has to study homeopathy. They have to become grounded in homeopathic methodology and philosophy and materia medica and all that. They have to do their studying. That's a given.
Sure.
But I think also what's important is for a person that they have to work on themselves as an individual. I mean, we all have to become healthier and healthier, and the healthier that you are as an individual, then you can be more of a service to your clients.
Sure.
And so I think it's very important for a person to work on themselves, and certainly part of that work is receiving classical homeopathic treatment and taking remedies, and maybe taking remedies every few years, of course, depending upon how one's health is. And I think it's also important that people be aware of psychological health and getting psychological counseling when it's necessary. I think that can be a very helpful thing for people to do. So I think that's, you've got the two elements. You've got the elements of, you've got to study the actual subject you're involved with, of course, and then you really have to, you know, it's like you have to heal yourself. You have to become self-aware. You have to become more and more self-aware so that you become a better individual, and then in turn you can help your clients.
Well, I couldn't agree more.
I
think that's absolutely, you hit the nail on the head with that. So, Jay, thank you so much. That was a very informative interview. Let me unmute it. And
Can I add another point here?
Yes, you certainly may. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'd like to read something from my new book, if I can.
Oh, please.
And this, one of the 111 great homeopaths that I profiled in this book, his name is Matthias Marenzeller. And we've never heard of him, or I didn't until I was doing the research, and then I was just amazed by what this man did and how he influenced homeopathy, and I want to read this short bio that I have book here. Matthias Marenzeller was one of the earliest converts to homeopathy, which his conversion occurred in Prague. He later introduced homeopathy into Austria. Upon orders by the Austrian emperor, he conducted the first homeopathic trials and, as a result, proved the efficacy of homeopathy. He was physician to Archduke John. As did many of the early pioneering homeopaths, he practiced with just 32 remedies. And if I can make a comment on that, it's very important for people to know the basic remedies, because you can do so much with, if you know 40 remedies or 30 remedies, you know them inside out, you can do amazing things with just a limited amount of remedies. Anyway, he practiced with just 32 remedies, and his Vienna practice was the largest in that entire city. Dr. Mathias arose at 5:30 a.m. and retired after 10 p.m. after seeing patients all day. That's inspiring to me.
Oh, totally.
That's one of the beautiful things about history. It's just a storehouse of inspiring stories.
Mm, I agree. I personally think that's what I love about the work that you're doing or the old journals. You know, for me, this is the best that homeopathy has to offer. And I always try to encourage people to go back and read these old journals and read these old materials because you get a sense of the power of homeopathy and really how effective it was for these, you know, epidemic, you know, diseases that ran through, you know, North America and Europe. It was just, it was so successful. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
Well, Jay, thank you again. That was a very informative. I really enjoyed that little reading that you gave. I'm going to go ahead and unmute your lines and open it up to the people who are on the lines with us and have them ask some questions. Hold on one second.
Okay.
So are other people there?
Yes. Jay, this is Mary from Boston. I was wondering who you studied plant spirit medicine with.
I did not. Let's put it this way. I took one course with what's the fellow's name? Stephen Harold Bruner, or Burner. I don't know his. I can't think of his exact name now. And then I've read Elliot Cohen's book, Plant Spirit Medicine, a very interesting book. And then, of course, I've done a lot of experimentation on my own.
Great.
So that's my background in that, as far as that goes.
Thanks, Jay.
What is the name of the case book?
It's Some Clinical Experiences of E.E. Case. That's the exact title of the book. Some Clinical Experiences of E.E. Case. Erastus Eli Case is his name, the physician.
Okay. Other questions?
Yes, Jay, this is Harold Goodman in Maryland. I have a copy of your cumulative index to the homeopathic physician, and I find it fascinating. I also find the essays that you wrote in connection with that as to many of the interesting things you found in the homeopathic physician journal while you were compiling your index.
Yeah.
I found that very, very interesting. And in there, you say that that's a small sample of what will be a future volume. I'm wondering if you ever will do that volume.
Oh, yeah, that's right. This was a, that's right. It was a sampling from another project called Homeopathic Visions. Right. I mean, it's been so long ago that I did that and... Yeah, it was my intention to bring out another volume, and I thought that I would also include this notebook in that follow-up volume. But to tell you the truth, I don't know if that'll ever see the light of day. There's just so much work to be done, you know. Yeah. But thanks for your question.
Yeah, and... I think that it's a fantastic job. I just treasure that index.
Mm. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hello.
Go ahead.
My name is Lynn. I'm curious to know how you combine shamanic work with homeopathy.
Okay. Well, as I mentioned, I don't really set out to combine the two. If I go on my if I do my journey work. And some homeopathic remedy or some sort of suggestion comes through in that line, then I'll pass that on to my client. But as far as actually, you know, making suggestions, I won't do that unless they actually are coming specifically for a homeopathic, you know, consultation. Does that help to answer your question?
Excuse me?
Does that help to answer the question?
Yes. I'm curious to know if you have other clients besides homeopathic clients that you journey with.
Oh, yeah. people will seek me out just to do journey work. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
I think we have time for one more question. So is there one final question somebody would like to ask? One last burning question?
I have a question. This is Harold Goodman again. With the exception of your dictionary, what has been the sales or the numbers of volumes that you've sold, say, of the Erastus Case book or the Nurses Materia Medica? Because I know that those are expensive for you to print up, and I'm wondering how many of them you actually are able to sell.
Well, that's a good question, and if I were to make a business decision and say, well, I'm going to produce this book, the Case book, the Woodbury book, it would probably, and I was working for a large company, it would probably be a black mark on my record making a decision of this. Because, I mean, I sold 1,000 case books in a period of 10 years. And, so, I mean, that's not a good business decision. And even with the Woodbury book, I've sold a lot less than that. So, my investment, the money that I put into, I really haven't, made money, you know. So if one were to make a pure business decision, those two projects are not a good decision. But
how many copies of your dictionary have you sold, Jay?
Well, I don't know exact title, exact amount, but I managed to sell probably about 1,000 a year. So, I mean, that pays printing costs, and I can justify. I can say, well, I'd pay some of my time involved. It doesn't pay, you know, certainly any kind of wage. But, you know, I am able to buy computer programs, computer stuff. And that's something else that I did when I wrote my dictionary. You know, when I finished the first edition of my dictionary, I realized that I wrote to several publishers and nobody was willing to really publish it to take it on. And I decided, well, I'm going to have to do this project myself if I really want to get it out there. So I had to, you know, buy a computer, learn the computer, learn desktop publishing. You know, I had to do all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, if you were to factor in all these other costs into what, you know, that in a sense is not even a good business decision either. But it's more or less a love. You know, so many of us work in this field because we love it. Sure. We believe it's the truth. A lot of people, I mean, in addition to this, a lot of people become healed with homeopathy. They may come into homeopathy thinking, oh, I want to be a practitioner. I want to study. I want to get involved with the lay groups. And then after a while, you don't see their names anymore. Where do these people go? Well, either they got bored with homeopathy, they moved on to something else, or homeopathy healed them, and then they decided, well, great, I got healed with homeopathy, but I don't feel like studying it anymore. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a great thing. Look what homeopathy did. It changed my life so that I've gone on to something else.
Right.
So, I mean, a person could answer questions and, you know, paragraphs on and on about some of these things.
Sure. Well, great. That was a great final testimonial to homeopathy, really, you know. And, I mean, I think you're right. A lot of people are in homeopathy. They do because we know that it can profoundly help suffering humanity. And hopefully one day it will assume its rightful place as a primary form of health care, you know. It rightly deserves to be, you know.
Yeah.
So let me unmute it. Let everyone say thank you so much. So can people say thank you to?
thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, folks.
Okay. Take care, everyone.
Okay.
Good night.
Thank you, Jay. Right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Good night.
Bye bye.
Hello.